listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is the Forza Podcast. We are back. It is Thursday, February 4th. I can't... Bro, we have been doing this podcast for over a year now.
That's crazy, dude.
That is insane. It, like, a year ago is when my fire alarm went off during our second or third episode.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. That was good times.
Yeah. I mean, and dude, what started just as a, you know, you and me sharing one microphone in my basement on that first episode.
We had to snuggle so you could hear both of us.
We were cuddling. We were spooning, talking about the Canes.
It's true. Rhett Lashley. As soon as Rhett Lashley came up, we had to separate ourselves for, you know, like 6 inches.
But, dude, lot of stuff happening right now for the Canes. National Signing Day just passed. 2021 class is over. Just like, I can't believe we're on to the 2022 class. T-Will, T-Rob, all these hires. We got a lot to talk about this episode. But I've been very, very, very much looking forward to this guest. I think this is probably the biggest guest that we've had so far since starting this podcast. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. Yeah. And this is, I feel like it's a pretty big deal, you know, that we're getting this guest on. It'll be fun to talk some recruiting. So
absolutely. Anyways,
I'm going to patch him in. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Mike, how are you?
Good.
Awesome, awesome. So we now welcome on big guest, Mike Farrell. He's the National Recruiting Director for Rivals.com. The guy is known around the country when it comes to recruiting. Mike, so National Signing Day is past. The 2021 class is over. Are you taking some time off to, you know, get away from recruiting for a little bit, or are you getting right into the next cycle?
No, I'm getting rid in. I mean, if Nick Saban's zooming with, you know, 15, 2022 kids today, then I'm going to be working on the 2022 class as well, because that's the only way to get great is to just keep plugging along.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So I want to start off first because you, obviously this is Miami Hurricanes podcast, and you recently talked to Manny Diaz either yesterday or the day before. You know, you talked to a lot of college football coaches. What was your, you know, thoughts when talking to Coach Diaz? What were your takeaways? And more importantly, what are your thoughts on Miami moving forward as a program this next season?
It was yesterday morning. And the first thing that struck me was that, you know, his office was right in front of an indoor practice facility, which they haven't had forever. You know, and I haven't been down there in a few years, and obviously with the pandemic, a lot of kids haven't been there either. But facilities wise, he admitted they were behind for a long time. And you know, that didn't make a difference when recruiting wasn't national, but it does now when kids are visiting every school and they got all the bells and whistles, and then they come to Miami and they get a little bit disappointed. You know, so that indoor practice facility and all the millions they've spent on their facilities, he's very excited about. You know, he obviously sold the weather too. I mean, it was 8 a.m. in the morning when I talked to him, and it was 70 degrees and sunny. And, you know, there's a lot of things to sell at Miami. And he said it can be done here. You know, it's been done before. You know, there's obviously been a dynasty at Miami before. So there's proof that it can be done. He's just got to keep a lot of the talent home and then, you know, evaluate and spot recruit properly when he does leave the state. And, you know, he's very happy about this class.
Okay. Well, so that brings up a few questions that I have for you, Mike. The first one that I want to ask is, how would you assess the Manny Diaz head coaching tenure so far at the University of Miami? I know we've had some ups and downs, but what's your overall takeaway?
Yeah, I'd give him probably a B-. You know, I'm teetering on C+, B-, because, you know, he inherited a not so great situation. So you got to give him a little bit of leeway there. Recruiting has improved, but they've lost some games that they should not lose. And that's the bottom line. And that's what Miami fans get upset with. So, you know, a season ago, it ended horribly. And that was his first year. And it was like, okay, what do we have here? Is this guy over his head? What, you know, this past year, I think we saw a little bit more of what we can expect. You know, an 8-3 season is a good building block. They were 4-1 at home, in conference 7-2. You know, no real horrible losses. And, you know, De'Aaron King helps that, and he's going to work the portal, you know, to continue to help his roster. But he wants to build, you know, he wants to build based on high school kids, as everybody does. I mean, every coach I talked to yesterday wants to build up based on, you know, developing players rather than just taking them from the portal. But when you can get a kid like, you know, De'Aaron King, it changes the rhythm and feeling of your team. And yes, they got crushed by Clemson, you know, and got crushed by North Carolina. They have work to do, mm-hmm. but not as much as the year before. I mean, that was an ugly year.
Yeah. So this is the next topic I want to ask you about. It's a little dense, so we can just kind of, you know, skirt around it, I guess. But it's something that Marsh and I talk a lot about on this show. From your outside perspective, do you consider the Miami Hurricanes program a blue chip program?
That's still a good question. That's a really good question. I would say no. And I grew up, you know, and cut my teeth in this business with, you know, Miami and the fatigues and the domination and Jimmy Johnson and, you know, the Michael Irvins and Warren Sapps of the world. And they were just, to me, being in New England as a Big East fan, they were just astonishingly incredible. And I got to see them every other year because I went to all the Boston College games, and I saw the game they almost lost where Ed Reed had the, you know, the 90-yard interception return and all that stuff. And they were just bigger than life, and they're not that way now. And so I look at them as a program that has a storied history, but that history is so long ago.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking 2001, 2002, that they can't be considered one of the blue chips in college football right now. Traditionally, yes, but not based on current results.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. One thing I want to ask you, and one thing that, you know, I ask a lot of the guests, whether it's former Hurricanes, things like that, do you think Manny Diaz is the guy to help somewhat bring back that, you know, that reputation and that relevancy in college football for Miami?
I don't know. You know, there's like 5 or 6 programs I want to be really good again, because I think it's good for college football. And you know, the rise of Clemson was unseen, you know, so that's good for college football as well. But when you have a strong Miami program, when you have a strong USC or Texas program, college football is much better. It takes a special coach to do that, to overcome everything, especially because everybody's in South Florida now. They're not afraid. You know, Urban Meyer is the one, I think, that really started the downfall of the dynasty. And Larry Coker kind of let it happen when he said, I don't care that they're Miami. I'm going in South Florida. And Doc Holliday was his recruiting coach, and they went down there and they took a bunch of kids out. And all of a sudden, kids realized, hey, we can go elsewhere, win a national championship. And that kind of ruined it for Miami at the time. I can't say that he is. You know, he's got one thing to do. He's got to win his division. You know, I talked to Mac Brown yesterday as well. That the path is clear for the ACC. You win your division and you beat Clemson. He's close to winning the division. Okay. You know, the UNC game was ugly, but he's not close to beating Clemson. you know, and so that's where I say, I don't know, you know, this class could really push it along. There's some real talented kids in here, but Miami always seems to stub their toe in some way lately. And until that stops, you know, like, remember there was Clemsoning?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Miami does the same thing now. It's like, they got to get over the hump and get that winning feeling and confidence in the culture of the program.
I feel like we have to graduate to Clemsoning, because I don't even feel like we're at that level yet. You know, like Clemsoning was, you know, was being a perennial top 10 team and then losing in your biggest game. You know, like it's like as soon as we sniff the top 10, we stub our toe. I think Clemsoning is the next level we have to get to, unfortunately. But I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. Baby steps.
Well, the skill positions need to change. I mean, come on, this is really embarrassing. You know, when I look at Miami and I scout teams, because, you know, I also fancy myself sort of a draft guy, you know, and because I've known these kids since they were, you know, 14. So I know what type of person, you know, Trevor Lawrence is. So I scout these teams and I look and I'm like, it is just amazing. Not only the drop passes, but the lack of development. I mean, Mark Pope. It's in his head. It's not his ability. It's in his head, and it's just, it hasn't been developed. And, you know, Lorenzo Lingard is now, you know, off at Florida, and I don't think he's going to be any better there. I don't think it was instilled in him to be great. And that's what really bothers me about this, is that there's no weapons. Their D-line is great. Their defense is solid. The O-line needs work. That's not pretty. But the skill guys, I mean, you got nobody who could take an 8-yard pass and turn it into a touchdown consistently. Yeah. And that is not Miami. And so they need to get back to that.
Yeah. I think we watched Mike Harley do that once last year. And it felt like that was the first time I had seen a Miami player do that in 15 years.
And every single week we are waiting for the Mark Pope breakout game. We've been waiting for 3 years.
It's not, I mean, after 3 years, it's not going to happen. It's just not. Yeah. And that is all head, mental, work ethic, developmental stuff. Like, he got there, he wasn't de-recruited clearly, and no one pushed him to be stronger and better. And that also comes with not having great defensive backs. You know, like, I mean, you need to have, you know, Saban was talking about Jerry Jeudy going up against Patrick Surtain in practice every day. You know, iron sharpens iron. There's nobody that can really do that on the defensive side of things either. So when you get a James Williams, you know, who is a special defensive back, you know, and he's a safety, so it's different than a corner. But when you get a guy like that, like a Derwin James at Florida State, you know, and they challenge you, but also bring along the other guys, you know, the Jalen Ramsey's of the world, although Ramsey was before Derwin. So it's Ramsey, Derwin, and then I forget who the next one was, but you need that. You need those guys that will bring along other guys and teach them how to be great. Now, is James Williams going to be the Mark Pope of defense? I don't know. But he better not be, because they need leaders and they need guys to step up and be great. And that's going to make other players great.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I have two questions. I have a question about James Williams. But first, I want to so Miami just hired Travaris Robinson as the new defensive backs coach and Travis Williams as the inside linebackers coach. I think our development, especially in defensive backs and linebackers, has been very, very underwhelming, honestly, for, you know, 10 plus years. What are your thoughts on these recent hires? And I also wanted to get your thoughts on Rhett Lashley and, you know, a guy like Rob Likens and Garen Justice.
I think these are good hires, because these are guys that, you know, have coached at the high school level. They've recently played at the NFL level, and by recent, you know, I mean, you know, Travis Williams last played in 2007, but that's recent enough, you know, for kids to say, wow, this guy was in the league. He was an all SEC guy. You know, he's got the credentials, and he worked his way up at Auburn, and I think he's going to be a good recruiter for them. You know, these are good hires from a recruiting aspect. Can they develop guys? I don't know. You know, the last linebacker coach that I really, really liked at Miami was Vernon Hargraves, and that was 100 years ago. you know, and he had the swagger. He had the U. And you know, again, Coker kind of – that whole – strategy of recruiting out of state and all this, it was a nightmare, and everybody split off, and I don't know where Vernon is now. Cincinnati? No, not Cincinnati. I don't know. East Carolina, somewhere. And you see a great coach like that go. off onto different jobs and different jobs and different jobs. I remember their linebacker room was so nasty that, you know, the competition was so good that, you know, there was no portal. These guys were killing each other in practice, and he loved it. And I don't know if Travis is that guy, but I think it's going to help for recruiting. I'm happy with these two hires if I'm a Miami fan, you know, from a recruiting aspect.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of Canes fans are very excited about, you know, what they will add in recruiting, especially in South Florida. I'm equally as excited about, you know, how good they are, you know, developing, because like I said, that is, we've been able to recruit well, but it's the developing. I mean, if you look at a guy like Gervin Hall, you know, he hasn't panned out, or DJ Ivy at cornerback. So, when you look at James Williams, though, is there a certain player that is comparable to him that you've seen in the past? Because, I mean, he is a safety, but he is a large, large safety. I mean, he's a very, very unique player. So if you could think of someone to compare James Williams to, who would that be?
Probably Shaq Thompson, who's with the Panthers now as a linebacker. Just a massive – and he's taller than Shaq Thompson, but – just a massive safety that you could easily see staying as a massive safety or moving to linebacker or playing that sort of in-between role, you know, like Derwin James did or like Jabril Peppers did at Michigan. You know, Shaq Thompson was a freak athlete. You know, hitting came last for him. And that's with James, too. James has become more physical and more aggressive, and that's why he got that fifth star. And you know, he just started off his career as a safety, but also a guy that they could bring on the blitz. And then he just grew and grew and grew and turned into a linebacker, first rounder. Now he's an NFL, really good player under the radar. I think that's who he is. You know, everybody says, oh, he's the next Ed Reed and all that. No, this kid's a monster. You know, so that's what I see. And I see him being sort of a hybrid linebacker safety, which is so important to your defense. Isaiah Simmons, I don't want to say Isaiah Simmons, but that type of role that he played at Clemson.
So, I mean, obviously Miami Hurricane fans are very high on James Williams, but we lack the national perspective that you get to have in your position at Rivals. Is James Williams potentially the kind of guy that can alter the course of a program?
It takes more than one. He's certainly a guy that can lead the defense, you know, and by that, I mean, inspire others. And, you know, there's other good defensive players in this class as well. So he's not going to have to do it by himself, but you can get a guy, you know, and Isaiah Simmons is an example, or Jalen Ramsey is an example, who is that hybrid, you know, James Williams could even play corner, safety, linebacker. You know, you could blitz, you could play deep, you could play press. He's that type of guy that can be such a Swiss Army knife in your defense that he's playing three different positions for you. Not at the same time, of course, but in certain sets, you can just put him where you want him. And that's what he could be. He's not there yet. But yes, he could be a difference maker like those guys were.
So one of the biggest recruiting gets for Miami this year was, you know, at the last minute before early signing day or on early signing day was Jay Garcia decommits from USC. 2 weeks later, signs to Miami. Did that surprise you that he ultimately chose Miami? And then also, you know, what kind of impact do you see him having with the Hurricanes? And do you see him as a future starter at Miami?
Yeah, he's going to be the guy, I think. You know, he's got that swagger at that West Coast. You know, quarterbacks of the West Coast are different because – and now, you know, other areas are catching up because everybody's got a quarterback coach and there's QB universities everywhere. But, you know, on West Coast, those guys are made to be quarterbacks from age four. And, you know, he's got that, you know, size and gunslinger mentality. You know, it reminds me a little bit of Matt Corral at Ole Miss, from a physical standpoint, from an arm talent standpoint, you know, and again, this is a kid who traveled across the country just to play his senior season. So you're getting a competitor and a kid who wants to play. So they've got Tyler and Dyke and you know, they've got Jake and the quarterback room is getting a little bit better. D'Eric, hopefully, you know, back next season after the injury. And then you hand the ball off to one of those two guys. But Jake Garcia is going to be a guy. You know, will he be great? I don't know. I mean, name the last great Miami quarterback.
Ken Dorsey.
So I can't say that he's going to be. There's been a lot of highly rated guys that have gone off to Miami and, yeah, and really, you know, floundered. But I think that's the talent around him. You know, Jake Garcia is going to be as good as his wide receiver group is and as good as his tight ends are and as good as his offensive line. I mean, he can't do it himself.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're very, very high on Jake. And Jordan and I are both West Coast guys, actually. So we're very excited that Jake chose Miami. I want to ask you, you know, we know about James Williams. We know about Jake Garcia. We know about Leonard Taylor. Who are some of maybe the under-the-radar players in this Miami class that stick out to you as guys that, you know, will be able to contribute and who you are very excited to see in the future?
Yeah, I mean, the three-star has been absolutely destroyed in the industry because, you know, when I was doing this and it was us and Scout, and ESPN was in it, but they didn't really rank three-star guys that much. They were just focused on the top guys. A three-star was a three-star. It was a very solid football player who was going to contribute possibly 2 years and be a honorable mention all-conference or potentially all-conference player. And then, you know, a new company came in, and I don't name them their name unless they want to pay me to, and gave everybody three stars. You know, it's like, now you see three stars and Miami fans are like, oh, great, another three star. These are good football players. I mean, Malik Curtis is a little tiny slot guy who could be a nightmare for teams because he's so good in space and he can make people miss. Their offensive line, you know, with Rodriguez and McLaughlin, both of those guys, I mean, one's 8 feet tall, McLaughlin's 6'8", 295. And the other one's a undersized interior guy with a nasty attitude in Rodriguez. You know, they're projects right now, but in a couple of years, they're going to be good players. And their linebackers, Thomas Davis and Deshaun Trautman, are also very good players. They just lack one thing. You know, like Trautman's a sawed-off. Okay, so he's a 5'7", three-star. Doesn't mean he stinks. But in this industry now, if you're a three, it's a disappointment. And that kind of bugs me because, you know, I've been around so long where the star system was kind of implemented when I was starting.
Yeah.
So I want people to have some perspective on this. These are good football players. Khalil Brantley could be the next Brevin Dixon at tight end. He's an undersized guy who could play outside flex. He can't really play in line. He's a 5'6", three star, but you just don't know. So there's a lot of under the radar talent in this class.
You know, one of those guys, and I call him the steal of this class for Miami, is Rashard Smith, you know, the slot receiver. What are your thoughts on him? And I'm just very excited to see him in a Rhett Lashley offense. What are your thoughts on him? And because I know Gator fans, they didn't really realize how good he was until he decommitted from Florida.
Yeah, he's 158 in the country for us, so he's one of their higher-rated recruits. He's 5'10", so he's not a tall target, but he's built like a running back. So he's like 200 pounds and very, very thick. So he's going to bounce off people, and he does have excellent speed. And he's a versatile kid. I mean, he can do a lot of different things. Like he can return. You could use him in a running back set if you wanted to. He's a really, really good blocker. And you know, again, that's a forgotten thing when you're evaluating prospects. But this is a physical football player who's going to do whatever it takes for his team. And that means go across the middle. He'll do whatever. So I like him. He doesn't have the elite, you know, 10, 300-meter speed that you want to be a five-star. But he's going to bounce off people and make a lot of yards after catch. That's what I like about him.
Do you see these? I mean, because you got Rashard Smith, Romello Brinson, Jacoby George. Do you see these Miami receivers, you know, turning a new page, you know, as opposed to the last few years where we haven't really been able to develop wide receivers?
That's completely on the coaches because their talent is there. you know, when I look at this wide receiver class, it's you know, there's four guys I got, and three of them are four stars. The talent is there. Each of them have their limitations. You know, Burchard isn't the tallest guy in the world. Romello's not the fastest guy in the world. Jacoby is really tiny. But they can be utilized in the proper way, especially in offenses that are spreading you out. But that's on the coaches. I mean, yes, could happen. But it also, you know, they could also be in the portal or fall on their face or get hurt. I mean, you just don't know. You have to recruit kids that want to play, that play with a passion and an anger, and that want to get better. And when the chips are down, rise up. And that's what I think is lacking at Miami. You know, I talked to Mario Cristobal yesterday. He used to play on the U during the great days. He said, if somebody was complaining about something, I mean, you know, Ray Lewis would jack him up in the locker room. That's it. Shut up. Let's go. You know, and you need that type of leadership. And I'm not sure who it's going to be, but somebody needs to take over from a player aspect and then coaching. These kids got to get better.
Yeah, we interviewed Dan Celio one time on this podcast, and he told us a story about, I think it was George Mira II was complaining about something, and Michael Irvin punched him square in the face and knocked his teeth out. So yep.
That's how it was, man. And that's how, you know, nowadays there'd be lawsuits, you'd be kicked out of school. And, you know, it's a different world we live in, but somebody needs to grab somebody by the collar and say, wake up. Or just get out, you know, and you can't just coddle these kids, you know, because that's what they're used to during the recruiting process. And they're told they're the greatest thing ever. And oh, my God, we love you so much. And then they get on campus and they're treated like freshmen and they don't know what to do with themselves. So a guy like Richard Smith, I have no question whatsoever that he's going to be a self-motivated individual. And you can tell just by the way he runs, just how the way he blocks, just how much he hustles. And how he never wants to go down. The other guys, I don't know. And we can tell in camps, and I'm working blind this year. You know, we had a camp in Miami. We had a camp in Orlando. But, you know, the pandemic shut us down in March. But I could tell you, you could tell the lazy kids from the ones that want to compete in camps. Yeah. And that's why people say underwear camps don't count. Yeah, they do. You know, the guys that don't care are more likely than not going to pan out.
Yeah. So,
go ahead, Jordan.
I want to ask you about. I know it's been a few years since he was a recruit, so you know, hopefully you remember a little bit of what we can expect. But Charleston Rambo, the former OU wide receiver, just transferred to Miami. Do you remember him much? Like, are you familiar with his game?
Yeah, I mean, Rambo was a highly ranked kid coming out of high school. The only issue that he had and still hasn't solved is the drops issue. And that's kind of what got him in a little bit of hot water, you know, because it's so competitive at Oklahoma when it comes to the wide receivers. You know, they throw the ball so much and you're going to be a star if you catch the ball. But if you drop a few, you know, you're finding yourself on the bench for, you know, and you're the fourth guy in a three wide out set and you're not on the field. He was a top 100 player. Very fluid, very smooth, very fast. Hands were erratic. Route running has gotten better. But if he could be consistent catching the football, he could be wide receiver one for you guys right away.
Cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, that might not be too hard to do, though.
No. Well, depends on if he drops every pass. I mean, he's just another one of your guys.
He came to the right school. Oh. We're becoming drop university at this point.
Oh, it's so frustrating.
Like, it's embarrassing. It's
so frustrating.
I mean, I watched a couple of the games, you know, just from a scouting perspective on these guys. And it's just like, you know, he got his head up field too early or he lost concentration. No, they just are not attacking the football. They're letting it get to them. And it's just it's miserably embarrassing.
So when that happens, like when a player doesn't live up to, you know, expectations, how much do you think is it, you know, in their own head and mental, and how much is of the blame can you place on, you know, position coaches and whatnot?
Listen, it's hard, you know, it's hard to blame position coaches because you don't know what's going on every day in practice and you don't know what they're telling these kids. I mean, you could tell a kid 1,000 times, you know, don't drop passes. You could work with them in the jug machine every day after practice. And then in a big game, he just drops it. And then mentally he becomes down and he loses focus, blah, blah, blah. You know, you have to be part coach, part psychologist. And, you know, I never really blame unless they look disorganized, you know, like if everybody's running the wrong routes and there's miscommunication everywhere, or, you know, like Florida this year with their defense was just nobody seemed to know what they were doing on half the plays. Then you can blame a coach because that's just lack of organization. Stupid penalties, you can blame a coach because that's lack of discipline. But when it comes to wide receivers, I mean, you know, again, you gotta work with them mentally and physically and keep them up. I mean, look at Mecole Hardman who dropped that punt, you know, for the Chiefs in the championship game. So many people came over the sideline, told him to keep his head up. And you're going to make a big play for us. And he was one of the keys to victory for Kansas City. Yeah. You need those guys to be uplifted. And I, you know, I can't say whether they are being or not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's, yeah, that's fair.
So I guess switching gears last year, we don't want to take up too much of your time, Mike.
Yeah, I got another one in like 3 minutes.
Okay. So let me ask you one last question then. We've had two good recruiting classes in a row, in my opinion. What's the outlook on the Miami Hurricanes? Do you think we're trending up as a program right now?
Yeah, I think in the division you're in, you know, obviously it's you and North Carolina, and I think it's a weak division, which is good. You know, and listen, the other division, the ACC, is weak too. So that's a good thing. You have an opportunity to do one of the two things that you need to do, which is win your division. And they certainly have that ability. I mean, you know, again, defensively, they fell apart against a really, really loaded North Carolina team. I mean, those two running backs are both going to be first and second rounders or second and third rounders. And the wide receivers are ridiculous. And they just got caught in a churn and couldn't come around. But they've beaten Virginia Tech in a tough game. You know, they've beaten Pitt in a tough game. So they're trending up. But until they win their division, which I think they've done once since they moved from the Big East. And yeah, that was like and that was like the year they just said, forget it because of the sanctions and stuff. I mean, you can't be on a high trend until you win your division. So I guess it's almost like, talk to me when you win your division and I'll let you know how far you are away from being where you want to be. And okay. they're not there yet.
Yeah. We'll have to call you back on the show when we finally do win our division. So hopefully it's next season.
If that ever happens.
Yeah.
I hope it happens. I mean, Miami is good for football. A good Miami is good for football. And there's a lot of alumni out there that I know, having covered them, who are just frustrated because they know the U can be great. And it'll eventually happen. But, you know, it's just not happening right now.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming on. If you'd like to plug whatever you got going, feel free.
Rivals.com or Miami says canesport.com, and I'm on Twitter, Rivals Mike. I'm on Instagram, Rivals Godfather. I'm all over the place. Rivals, I'm on TikTok now, Rivals Mike, Rivals Godfather, I think, over there. I don't know. Yeah. I'm everywhere, just building the brand, and just follow me, interact with me, yell at me, whatever you want to do. It's fine. disagreements are excellent, and I just like the community. And being able to speak to other college football fans.
Cool. Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you so much, Mike. You know, one of these days we'll have to get you on again.
All right, no problem.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Brother, have a good one, man.
See you. Bye.
Cool. That was awesome, man. What a great interview.
Wow. Yeah. I honestly could have talked, like, I had like 5 more questions.
Yeah, it was very kind of him to come on, and I agree with you, man. I could have... I mean, here it's 10:30 a.m. on a work day.
And, how much sleep do you think a guy like that gets a night?
I thought you were going to ask me, and I was going to say not very much, but he probably gets less.
Yeah. I mean, he to know, like, to give in-depth answers on every single player we ask, and it's insane.
Yeah, and I imagine that he could do that for – 50 plus schools, bare minimum.
Oh, I mean, and he remembers Charleston Rambo as a recruit and what he's like. I wonder how much time he spends, looking at current college programs, not just in the recruiting, like recruits. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Pretty crazy, man. That's,
I feel like I have to, I don't know. I have to catch my breath. He's a fast talker.
Yeah, it was awesome. That's so, Mike, if you listen to this back on repeat, man, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate that. So, Marsh, I have a question for you. It's time to talk to everybody, man. And are you a Mountain Dew guy?
You know this. Come on. I'm a Diet Coke guy.
Okay, I did know that. So you don't even like Mountain Dew?
I can't tell you the last time I had a Mountain Dew. It's been 5+ years.
Fair enough. Well, okay, so I did want to ask you, I know you like Monsters. Have you tried the new pineapple Monster?
I haven't had the pineapple one, but I know you and I talked about the watermelon one.
Yeah, that one was good.
I'm actually drinking a Bang right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That sounds
delightful. I haven't tried the pineapple one yet, but I'm a sucker for pineapple, so...
I like the white flavor Monster. It's classic. I'm a simple man.
It's kind of Fresca-y. I like it.
Yeah. It always has a nice little kick. Okay, so let's kind of expand on one of the points that we talked about, and that is Travaris or T. Rob and T. Will. They have joined the coaching staff. This is the two guys that Miami fans wanted. And Manny Diaz, he didn't fire Blake Baker. Ed Orgeron did the Lord's work and, picked him up from us. But somehow, some way, it happened. I am ecstatic about these two hires. What are your thoughts?
I thought they were the best hires. I mean, they were the best hires that we could have made, right? In terms of realism, and actually, I think it was both of these guys, I think, were on the fringe of being not realistic because they were so good. Home run hires, however, I mean, it's just my opinion. You guys know me. I tend to be fairly, I don't know. I'm very tepid with like heaping praise, right? Because I mean, look at the state of the program. We haven't done anything worth a heaping amount of praise in a very long time. So I don't want to get overly ahead of myself, right? Like, I don't know if two position coaching hires make us an elite team next year, make our defense a whole lot better than 51st. But just to answer the basic question, pretty close to a home run, man, if not a home run. I think those were the two best position coaches on the market for what we were looking for that were in the realm of what we could do.
Have you watched – so yesterday, the coaches did a press conference for National Signing Day and the new coaches spoke to the media. Have you had a chance to watch those?
I have, yeah.
I mean, just T. Will, especially Travis Williams, does he not give you the energetic feeling that Rhett Lashley gave you last year when he was hired and spoke to the team for the first time?
Absolutely. He's an inspiring guy.
He has that energy, bro.
Yeah, he has. It's weird. It's almost. Did you ever watch Dragon Ball Z growing up?
Kamehameha.
Yeah, it's almost like when they power up and they're like so powerful that they have like they broke the ground underneath them. They have little like particles of rocks that are like orbiting them because of how powerful they are. He almost has like an aura like that. There's a certain intensity that's really inspiring about Travis Williams. So I thought it was a home run.
It's crazy. Yeah, bro. It's crazy seeing like the energy and the confidence level that Blake Baker had compared to like a guy like Travis Williams or even like a Mike Rumpf or a Ephraim Banda. Like Travis Williams, like that energy, like players feed off that. That's the kind of coach they want to play. Unless you're like a Nick Saban and, you don't really show that much emotion. Like players want that kind of a like emotion and optimism and confidence from their head coach. I mean, T. Will said like like, this is the U. Like, this is, he called this linebacker U, bro.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been a little bit, but yeah, it is. I mean, think about the linebackers we've put out, you know? I mean, Ray Lewis is one of the best linebackers in NFL history, and he's not even the best University of Miami linebacker ever. You know, I mean, that's Dan Morgan. And then, I mean, even in our down years, like, we still put Perryman in the league, you know? Like, he's really good. He's an impact player for the Chargers defense. So
I think that's the last linebacker that we've put in the league.
Yeah. You know, we had some really solid college linebackers, though. They didn't really translate. But, like, Colin McCarthy and Sean Spence were both fantastic linebackers that just didn't really translate to the NFL game.
And Sean, I feel I always thought Sean Spence was going to. I thought he was going to be a good pro linebacker.
Me too.
But if you look at our linebackers, I have to read a stat for you. Okay. You may have seen it. I tweeted it yesterday. Let me go down my tweets. I'm back on my tweeting crap today, so I have to scroll down. It's the stats. Okay. So last year, obviously T. Wills coaching the linebackers at Auburn. Mm-hmm. So here are his, and you know, he starts two linebackers. That's his defensive scheme. One of the linebackers had 113 tackles, and the other starter had 93. Now here are the stats from the 2020 Miami linebackers. Bradley Jennings Jr., 39 tackles. Sam Brooks, 37 tackles. And Zach McLeod, 27 tackles.
That's just not good enough, man.
That's insane.
It is.
Could you imagine one of our defensive players having 100 tackles?
No. No, I can't.
Yeah, I just don't want people to put in their minds that we're like Bradley Jennings Jr. is going to turn into Dan Morgan all of a sudden. Like, this is going to take time. The talent has to meet them somewhat halfway.
That's kind of what I've been trying to preach. I know it's been a minute since we've done a fours up, but at least on Twitter and Kane Gang and, you know, everywhere else, I've been trying to preach that approach on the whole defense, and that you hit the nail on the head. At some point, the talent has to meet the coaches halfway. We do have some good coaching, but like you said, we have, I mean, how many 4-star linebackers do we have on roster right now? Like two?
I have the roster pulled up. We have Sam Brooks was a 4-star.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Avery Huff was a 4-star.
Yep.
Other than him, those are the only two.
Yeah, and I think only one of those guys was like a 247 top 300 or whatever, you know, we haven't recruited at a very high level at the linebacker position, and we've struggled a lot at the corner position as well. I think there's a guy on Twitter in Kane's fam, and I feel bad that I can't give credit where it's due, because I love these edits that they make. It's like the defensive depth chart by position, and they list the recruiting accolades, you know? So it's like, it has the ESPN top 300, the 247, 150 or whatever, and the Rivals 150 or, you know, I can't remember the exact numbers, but then it just goes down the depth chart to show like the blue chip ratio that we have. Right.
Yeah.
And, dude, it was really bad. It was like almost every player was blue chip at every position, it seemed like. Besides linebacker, we had like one. Mm-hmm. And at corner, we had like two. And it's like that.
Yeah.
That's bad. Because it made the chart look weird. You know what I mean? Like it was visibly under-recruited compared to the rest of our positions.
I know that, you know, Deshaun Troutman, you know, is a quote unquote old school Kane. And, you know, Mike just talked about Thomas Davis, and, you know, you got Tyler Johnson, Jaquan's little brother. We don't have any cornerbacks coming in for the 2021 class.
I just rolled my eyes so hard I have a headache.
We're not like that's why I can't wait to see what T. Will and T. Rob do on the recruiting trail. We already have a crystal ball for a top five 2022 cornerback right now.
Yeah.
And Martin he's been Rogers, on the right? Yeah, he's been on the job for about 45 seconds.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. I do think, I mean, I hope I'm wrong, right? But what I'm going to be preaching all offseason is that, like, do not set your targets on a top 15 defense again, because it's probably not going to happen this year.
I do think we'll improve.
We probably will.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you think about it, like, we lost our two best players and we didn't replace them with guys of equal talent. You know, so we had the 51st defense. We lost two first round picks on
51st.
Yeah. And remember, dude, that's what I was preaching all last offseason. I was saying that this was going to be Manny's worst defense because of talent. And I don't know, man. Like, I get that Manny's play calling will probably bump us up a few spots. Position coaches might bump us up a few spots. However, across the board, it's the same guys coming back minus our two best players. So there's going to be some development, but a lot of the personnel issues that we had last year will carry on into next season.
Oh, no. I mean, absolutely. I think on defense, I'm very excited to see Tyreek Stevenson. I think him working with DVD and T-Rob, I think he's going to, you know, turn out to be a really nice cornerback. Yeah. I'm excited to see what Tecori Couch does, you know, if he can take it, you know, that next step. You know who I'm really excited to watch is Sam Brooks.
Yeah.
I think he's going to turn into like by far our best linebacker. It's not saying much, but I think Nesta's going to do really well with Jeff Simpson. And everyone's talking about, like, Jafari Harvey. Like, he's, like, I know he's a physical freak and he could be very good, like, in the future. But I don't see him taking, like, a Jalen Phillips or a Greg Rousseau leap. And I think a lot of people are kind of just expecting that because we've had good defensive ends the last 3 years. I don't know, man. Like, I'm...
Yeah, I hear people, you know, use the example of, well, we were fine after Rousseau left, so we'll be fine now that Phillips and Roche leave. That's a total false equivalency. It's not nearly the same. It's not nearly the same situation because, okay, so Roche leaves, right? He's a first-round talent, okay? You're replacing him with the returning leader in sacks in all of college football in Quincy Roche. He comes into the program, okay? And off the bench, you have one of the most supremely talented physical specimens in recruiting in the last 5 years with Jalen Phillips, the number one overall recruit, okay? Mm-hmm. And I like Jafari Harvey. I like the potential of Zach McLeod at defensive end, okay? I like DeAndre. Well, I haven't watched a lot of DeAndre Johnson, but, you know, people tell me good things, right? And I like Cam Williams. I really like Cam Williams from what we saw last year. However, none of those guys are Quincy Roche or Jalen Phillips. Could they become that level? Sure. You know, they're all pretty young, right? Harvey has a few years. Williams has a few years. Quentin Williams has a few years. You know, we have a lot of, you know, Chance Williams could get there. My thing, though, is, like, this is not nearly the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I look at – I just don't see any, like – I don't want to – there's nobody on this defensive roster who's ready to play at a Jalen Phillips or a Greg Rousseau level in 2021. Agreed. Like, DeAndre Johnson is he's an average defensive end. Nesta, we don't know because he can only be good for two games at a time.
I'm kind of low on Nesta.
Yeah. I mean, this is literally his last shot to do something. You know what? I think Bubba Bolden, I think with T-Rob, he, you know, he's going to be a lot better. It's a huge improvement to go from Coach Banda developing to a guy like T-Rob who has sent multiple guys in the first and second round. Yeah, I agree. That's huge.
It is huge. It is huge. And, you know, Bubba Bolden, I think, is in for a big year. and, you know, the guy that I'm ready to shout his name from the rooftops all offseason talking, you know, projecting the future of this defense is Gilbert Frierson.
Yes.
Yeah, I love how Gil was playing at the end of last year. I expect him to be a leader on the field in terms of his play. You know, I don't know much about his personality, like whether he'll be a locker room leader, but I expect him to be like probably the best player on our defense next season.
I mean, I think him and Bubba are going to be head and shoulders above everyone else, honestly.
Yeah. I'm really hoping that Jared Harrison Hunt pops a little more, because, I mean, he showed flashes of dominance last year, which was very nice. I am worried about our defensive line as a unit if he doesn't pop, though. I think we're solid across the board, but, like, we've had star power there the last few seasons, and we've lost it.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, we have a guy like Jafari who we know can be good.
Yeah,
we're just in that waiting period.
Agreed. And I'm not saying none of these guys can be stars. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying is none of them have proven to be stars yet, and so it's a fool's mission to project that, right? I think you can dangle the carrot out there and say, you know, Jared Harrison Hunt is a guy that could pop and become a star. Jafari Harvey could pop and become a star this year, but. You know, it's a little far-fetched to already coronate them as such.
Yeah. Who would have thought that we'd spend so much time worrying about the defense as a Kane fan? Someone asked me this last night. What would you grade Miami's staff right now from top to bottom?
Pretty good. I mean, breaking down the position, let's see. On defense... Dude, I mean, you have to go, like, high B, low A, you know? Well, it depends on what's an A. A would probably have to be, like, a Nick Saban staff where you're pulling guys from NFL head coaching jobs to be your position coach.
Yeah, he's in, like, a whole other kingdom.
Yeah, so I'd probably go, like, a B+.
Well, I forgot to mention, we hired an analyst, a defensive analyst, Bob Shoup.
Yes, which that brings up a lot of interesting areas to you know, there's a lot of interesting angles to take on that one, right? He's a very experienced defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. He's getting bankrolled this year from the University of Michigan. So, you know, him taking an off-field role is probably more indicative of his pay situation with Michigan than his – responsibility here at University of Miami.
You know, because I'm such a huge Saban fan, and I know what you know, what an advantage having analysts are, and obviously we don't have the budget that Alabama does. We could bring on 10 to 12, you know, former college head coaches, NFL coaches as analysts, but I just give me one, and we got a really, really good one, I think. Yep. He is going to be kind of, bro, he has 35, he's been a defensive coordinator at three different schools. His 2018 Mississippi State defense gave up 12 touchdowns all season.
That's crazy.
I mean, the guy knows defense, and more than anything, he has experience. He is going to be the guy that is necessary for Manny to, you know, fix this ship a little bit. Because and for the past few years, like, nobody on the defensive staff had nowhere near that kind of experience besides Todd Stroud.
Yeah, it almost makes me wonder if he's going to be like kind of a de facto defensive coordinator, right? I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. He can't be on the field. He'll be in the booth. Who knows if he would be able to call plays from up there or not. But and Manny said that he's going to call plays. But you got to think that he's probably going to be the guy handling the day-to-day stuff in practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, that is just speculation on that part. But it's nice to have that ability, right?
It's just an added advantage. Like, he'll bring more. It's just surrounding yourself with great football minds. I love this hire just because it's, you know, a Saban kind of thing.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. I mean, that's the thing, though, is with our – the way society is with social media and you can know so much about people, there's no excuse for people to not follow the Saban blueprint earlier or, like, better and mm-hmm. you know, more strictly. It just doesn't make sense. You know, I had a conversation a few weeks ago with somebody who, you know, has intimate knowledge of the recruiting process that Nick Saban does and other coaches, right? And I don't want to throw any coaches under the bus by name. However, I will say that like this person I was talking to would tell you straight up, like Nick Saban does it so much better than everyone because he puts in more time, he yes. puts in more detail, he cares more, he's more personable. You know what I mean? Like he spends more time talking about minutia with parents than other head coaches do. And yeah. it's like if I can learn that in my basement in Salt Lake City, then how do these other Power Five head coaches not learn that as well and implement that? Like if it's to the point that Nick Saban is still outdoing you on the trail because he's spending more quality time with parents, then I don't even know what to say at that point. Like, you just have to start assuming that people's brains don't work that well.
Bro, he will not offer a scholarship to a player unless he has actually seen him in person, like, done all of his – and it's not just watching him in person, but it's going through this checklist. Bro, you have to read this book about Saban. Like, it is incredible. And people wonder why I talk about Nick Saban, like, nonstop. It's because I'm attracted to, like, that level of greatness. And it's something to strive for everyone. And you know, there's so many Canes fans that say, well, this is Miami, we're different. And I'm like, well, you know, maybe, you know, our way hasn't worked so well.
Yeah. We are different from Nick Saban in that, you know, we're getting blown out by North Carolina and he's winning championships.
Yeah, bro. I was actually going to ask Mike, like, where does Nick Saban rank in terms of, you know, the greatest recruiters, 1 through 2? Where does he rank?
One is Nick, and number 2 is Saban.
Yes. Right? He spends so much time, like, learning about, like, homes that when he goes into these recruits' homes, he can talk with the parents about, like, this architecture and the frames and the windows and the shades. He walks on water.
He's dreamy.
I want him to give me away whenever I get married.
He's gonna walk you down the aisle.
Yeah. Hold on, babe. Nick Saban's walking me. I'm right. Gonna switch roles. Before we close, what do you think? Amari Carter's coming back. McLeod's coming back. John Ford's coming back. Yay!
Yeah, it's I don't know. I don't even know what to think about it, right? Like, Amari Carter he's okay when he's on the field and not in the locker room because he's been targeting people. Zach McLeod, I actually don't mind. You know, it would not surprise me if Zach McLeod starts a few games at defensive end for us. You know, I actually liked what I saw. I know he had some problems with over pursuing in the bowl game. However, I liked his athleticism and you know, we interviewed him last week on the radio show, and he was saying that he was 30 pounds underweight in that bowl game.
Sheesh.
And for defensive end, right? Because he got COVID, so he was struggling with his weight, and he only took reps like that week at defensive end. So I'm thinking, you know, if he's blowing by guys, you know, if he puts on some weight, he's working with Jess Simpson and Coach Feely. Like, I like the potential there. I actually think his skill set fits a little better for just getting upfield, right? I think he kind of struggled in situations where he had to diagnose plays. If he can just, like, get upfield as quickly as possible and play contain or try to get some sacks, you know, my mind is open to that, right?
Bro, I just hope that this is finally the season. We have one year. We have one shot left. I just want to see Amari Carter play some linebacker. Yeah. Like, enough's enough. Like, Come on.
We need him. We need him at linebacker. That's the thing, too, is like,
yeah,
it would be hard to argue that, you know, move him to linebacker and we for sure have three dudes better than him. You can't really do that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, let's at least give it a shot and see what happens.
Yeah. What do you got to lose?
We got nothing to lose, and we're loaded at safety.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, kind of. We have Bubba. When we have a lot of good young players.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. Because, you know, that's something that I preach is talent does not equal production. And I just fell into that trap. So,
Jordan.
You're 100% right. Is that we don't have a lot of production at safety right now.
Yeah, talking to Mike, I'm just so excited to watch James Williams.
Yeah.
Oh.
I hope, man. The kid has freak potential.
Yeah, freaky. Kate, last question. Quick prediction. Schedule came out. What are we doing in 2021? Quick thoughts.
9-3 is what I'm thinking.
Oh, wow. Look at you, Mr. Positive.
Yeah. All right, what are you talking about, dude? Everyone on Twitter says that I'm the most negative Canes fan of all time.
Until they see that I say 8-4.
Yeah. You get away with it better than I do. I don't know what it is.
I really don't, dude. I mean, I really don't. It's funny because I go through the same.
Yeah.
It's the same debate every single year.
Yep.
And they still don't get it. But I don't want to like sound negative. I think next year, like we're going to see a lot of improvements this year.
I hope so. I mean, the problem is that Alabama is just a loss. You know, it's going to be the line's going to be like minus 24 for Alabama.
Yeah, it's going to be like minus 56. Like,
I don't love playing at North Carolina. I mean, you know, maybe not a lot of our listeners would understand this, but Marsh, like you know where the BYU and Utah rivalry is at right now.
Yeah.
I am worried that we are dangerously close to being in that kind of situation. Like, because Utah on the field isn't a ton better than BYU every year. But there is some type of mental and emotional domination that's going on in that rivalry that it's like BYU just, for whatever reason, cannot beat Utah. Even if they had better players across the board, I still would probably pick them to lose until they prove that they can win.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, 100%. Like, one of the biggest, like, top three goals for Manny this year, you have to beat North Carolina.
Yeah. I mean, does it feel reminiscent of that BYU-Utah situation at all to you? Because that's kind of what I'm feeling.
I mean,
I'm feeling a lot like BYU right now.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Utah has beaten BYU, I think, 10 straight times.
Yeah. But it's the mentality, though. Like, we knew that game was over the first drive.
Yeah.
You know, and the Mac Brown situation and them throwing the U down. I mean, it's kind of like the thing where it's like they throw the U down and we want to like get them back. But at the end of the day, they blew us out. So what do? You know, you just stick your tongue out and run away crying, you know.
You know, I think when you look at Utah and BYU, Utah is a much better besides this year, actually, because BYU played pretty well. But over the last 10 years during this win streak, Utah has been you know, a superior, better, you know, a much better program. Miami and UNC, it just so happened that this last meeting, UNC played a perfect game and Miami played the absolute worst game. Like it was a horrible, you know, it was a horrible matchup. I don't see that happening again in 2021. You know, they don't, you know, they're losing both running backs, their wide receivers. But the hardest thing is that game is going to be on 16 days rest for the Canes.
Yep.
16. And
I hereby decree that we have to call Mac Brown Mac Daddy from now on, because he's our daddy.
He's our granddaddy. He's so old.
He is old. But dude, for some reason, like, I feel like he just gets under Manny's skin or something. Like I don't
even think it's that. I just think Manny has like a mental block.
Yeah.
Like in going up against him.
Yeah. Well, anyways, is that good for today? Dude, we really need to be better about this because I love doing it. I know you love doing it.
I know.
And we just have a lot going on in life lately, so.
Let's plan a day right now. When's the next episode?
Tuesday.
Tuesday?
Tuesday.
I can do Tuesday. Okay. All right. I told I was talking to Mike McCoy. He wants to come on soon. So, and then hopefully, you know, we can that recruiting show we were talking about before. Maybe we can do something there. But
that'd be a lot of fun, man.
That would be. Okay. All right. Big thanks to Mike Farrell or Farrell. That was amazing. That was a huge like stepping stone for us.
Oh, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I think you know, him coming on and plus his perspective was so nice. You know, I feel like we kind of get into an echo chamber because we usually talk to Miami people. Mm-hmm. And that we all kind of, I mean, we all follow the same people. We all tweet at each other. You know, we kind of get locked into a group narrative. So it was nice to see him where he's like above that stuff, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't get bogged down by the narratives that we see every day on Twitter. So it was nice to have that kind of perspective.
And he has no problem saying how embarrassing Pope and Wiggins dropping passes is. Okay. All right. We will talk to you guys on Tuesday, and we're just a month away from spring ball. So until then, until Tuesday, go Canes.
Go Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like and leave a comment to help our podcast.